digging in deeper on some serious problems in our country. Next, on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is my Vice Chairman, co-host, good friend, fellow analyst, deep thinker, and all-around great guy, Chuck Mathis.
Did you say deep stinker?
I'll leave that up to our listeners to determine.
Well, I'm sure there are one or two that don't necessarily agree with our positions. So,
well, that's possibilities. Now, you know what? Yesterday, Chuck, you were taking some victory laps and hooping it up a little bit like Tim Tebow after the overtime pass. But I think as we broke from our recording, we did some more research, and the deeper we dig on this whole issue regarding the Enemy Expatriation Act and the history, the more we find reasons to say, hey, wait a minute, we got a big problem.
We have a major problem. This is sort of like driving through Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. If you've ever driven on surface roads in Pittsburgh, you can see the place where you want to be. Just above you, but you have to drive 8 miles to get there because everything's built on this terrace. That's where we are. And this is turning into sort of a corkscrew road. As I told you earlier, I'm beginning to see a great deal of corkscrew logic in some of these things having to do with stripping American citizens of their citizenship. And I want to make it kind of clear. I am not coming out and trying to make an argument that anything that any American citizen would do is A-okay with me. It's not. I am one of those people who knows something about the Constitution, knows that there's a constitutional remedy for American citizens who take up arms against the country, and it's called a treason trial.
Yes,
and the fact is that the President of the United States, and not just this sitting one, but the last sitting one, and every sitting one since at least Roosevelt, the second Roosevelt, Franklin, has wanted the power to detain American citizens on the basis of something that they don't like that these people have done, and they have bypassed the requirement for a treason trial to do these things. And one of the things we talked about yesterday was ex parte querying, in which you had brought up the fact that at least one of the guys was an American citizen, had yes. been naturalized. They were all born in Germany, let's make that clear.
Yeah,
all of them had actually lived in the United States for a period and had returned to Germany between 1933 and about 1941. One of those people was Haupt, and I think Haupt had the strongest claim on an American citizenship. Another one was named Berger. Now, he claimed American citizenship as well, but he claimed it on a very tenuous thread. Let's put it this way. He attempted to hang a concrete block from a 5-pound test line, and it didn't hold, and that's completely understandable. What he claimed was that at the age of 5 years old, his parents had become naturalized citizens, and he claimed American citizenship on that basis. Well, I'm not sure what the immigration laws said in the 20s and 30s when this would have happened, but I'm pretty sure that you didn't automatically become a naturalized citizen because your parents did, and you were born outside the country. I think you also had to be naturalized.
I believe
I could be wrong. I could be wrong, but I'm going on the assumption that I'm right, and I don't think that's an unwise way to handle this.
Well, I think if our listeners have been listening with us long enough on this program, they know that we do assume that we're right about these things, and when we're wrong, we'll tell you.
Yeah, that's right, and that's kind of what we're doing today. We're doing a little bit of a slight mea culpa because there is, in ex parte querying, there is a sort of a tenuous ruling that American citizens can be held as enemy combatants. There's a problem here that I see. There's a twofold problem. One of the claims that I read, and I read this in a paper by a man named Robert E. Cushman from the Cornell Law Quarterly, and I can only see a few pages of it because I'm not going to pay $30 to download the document. But I can see enough of it.
Neither am I.
Yeah, that's right. If you want the Policy Institute to be able to download things like this, we'll happily accept donations. www.principledpolicy.com. Click on the donate, and you can specify that you're donating $30 so we can download this paper. I see a major problem here in that it is asserted that Berger had, quote unquote, forfeited his American citizenship by induction into the German army in 1941. Well, okay, I say to that, says who? My whole point being that as a naturalized citizen, he's still a citizen of the United States.
Right. Now it's my understanding, Chuck, and maybe I'm wrong on this, as we looked at that language in Title 8 of the United States Code in Section 1481, which is what the Enemy Expatriation Act is attempting to amend, that basically said that the only really way that they would have to, you can give up your United States citizenship, or what they call your United States nationality, is to obtain naturalization in a foreign state upon an application after, and you have to be 18 years old in order to do it, so you can't be under 18, or taking an oath or making an affirmation or other formal declaration of allegiance to a foreign state, or entering and serving in the armed forces of a foreign state if they're engaged in hostilities against the U.S., or if you serve as a commissioned or non-commissioned officer. So basically, is if you act as an agent of a foreign state, and here it is, there's the other part, you have to make a formal renunciation of nationality before a diplomatic or consular officer of the United States in a foreign state in such form as may be prescribed by the Secretary of State. So in other words, it has to be done in writing. It even says that if you do it in the U.S., it has to be a formal written renunciation of your nationality in such form as may be prescribed by and before such officer as may be designated by the Attorney General. Whenever the United States shall be in a state of war and the AG shall approve such renunciation is not contrary to the interests of national defense. So basically, other than committing an overt act of treason and being adjudicated in the court as being found treasonous, you have to actually formally fill out paperwork in order to lose your U.S. citizenship.
And the bottom line on that is that it has to eventually, if I'm not mistaken, it doesn't just go through the State Department, it has to go through the court system first.
It's unclear with this particular subsection. It may be in another subsection of the immigration and naturalization laws, but there may be a situation where, but it seems like there has to be some formal renunciation, and all of that has to be done, and it has to be a form that at least somebody, whether it's the State Department, the Justice Department, or the courts, have to receive and acknowledge in order for that to be effective.
Well, let's do a theoretical.
Sure.
Let's take this Berger, and I believe that he was adjudicated. Basically, it was said by a military tribunal. Let's not say adjudication, because that presumes that the judicial branch had something to do with this. And none of these men had any hearing before any regular court except the Supreme Court in this ex parte hearing. Let's do the theoretical that the military court said that he had forfeited his citizenship by joining a foreign army. Well, where is the constitutional authority for the military court to make that determination?
As far as I know, there doesn't seem to be any specific spell out of that kind of authority.
Okay. We have in the Constitution a prohibition against something called a bill of attainder. And we've talked about bills of attainder on several different occasions. We've taught about bills of attainder a lot in our Constitution classes when we do our institutes on the Constitution. And the reason we teach about that particular subject is the fact that almost nobody knows what a bill of attainder is. Well, a bill of attainder is a finding of guilt or what they call an attainting of someone by a legislature.
That's right.
In other words, someone is not given the benefit of a trial. It comes out of the English system, the common law system, where in Parliament, the king would say, I don't like that guy, and Parliament would basically strip him of his titles and his lands and his citizenship privileges by simple legislative fiat. Well, that's forbidden by the United States Constitution. And if you look really closely at what these papers say, what's implied in these papers, and we can't get any real details. That's the problem. It looks like basically what's happened is someone said, well, he joined a foreign army and therefore he loses his citizenship. That's the whole point behind S-1683 and H.R. 3166. These are bills of attainder. Another thing that has gone on here, if you think about it, is you've got a problem with Berger. If he is a U.S. citizen, then by definition, he was entitled to a treason trial. He was entitled to be pulled out from that group of German citizens and tried as an American citizen for treason. This simply is not deniable. And the Supreme Court basically said, no, we're not going to do that. Instead, we're going to strip him of his citizenship. Well, you can't do that. You can't do it without a trial. It's very clear that basically in Article 3, it says very clearly, the Congress shall have the power to declare the punishment of treason, but right. No attainder of treason shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture except during the life of the person attained it. In other words, Article 3 is the powers of the court. It's not the powers of Congress. Congress gets to set the punishment. They don't get to make the pronouncement, okay? And that seems to be what's happened in this case. Now you've got to, here's where the corkscrew logic comes in. If Haupt was still a citizen, he was due a treason trial. If he gave up if he supposedly abrogated his citizenship by joining a foreign army, that's unconstitutional. You can't do that. You can't make that pronouncement. That has to be done through a trial. So you've got a major problem here.
Yes, you do. Now, the other thing that it strikes me as, Charles, I mean, we haven't really even touched on it yet, but what does that do with the relationship of U.S. citizens who happen to be soldiers who are then put under foreign command? They're put under command of the general of Russian army or the general of the French forces. Where do you draw the line? At some point, even though there may be joint agreements between the countries, whether it's through NATO or the United Nations or what have you, could there be an argument that after a certain period of time, that person is actually fighting for a foreign country if they stay under the command of a foreign officer?
There's that. And let's say, for instance, a foreign commander ordered an American soldier to do something that would be against the interests of the United States of America, despite the fact that he is an American soldier. He's fighting under a foreign commander. And let's say that foreign commander orders him to do something, attack an American embassy or something. Now, what does the soldier do? He's bound by orders of his commander in chief, supposedly, to follow the orders of this foreign commander. But now he's being ordered to attack American soil. You've got a major problem on your hands now, because you could very easily say the real act of treason was obeying the order from the foreign commander.
Very much so. Now, I understand that people are going to say, well, that can't happen because, you know, our troops are only under foreign command, temporarily. And you can hear it and you just go on and on. This is that up just recently, who would have entertained the idea that American citizens could be detained by their own military in undisclosed locations without the benefit of counsel or even the charges being brought against them? And should H.R. 3166 pass, could have their citizenship rights revoked based on even less than that.
Oh, well, yeah, exactly. We are rapidly creating, Barry, a series of circumstances under which a president could easily declare martial law and begin to round up people who oppose his particular agenda.
Mm-hmm.
That may sound paranoid, and I realize that it does to some people. You know, they'll call us nutcases, but the fact is, this is how nations fall from within. Just ask anybody who knew anything about German history from about 1928 until 1946. The fact is, this is exactly how it was done. Piecemeal destruction, little piece here, little piece there, always calling on people's patriotism to get them to support these things and to root out these quote-unquote internal enemies. I'm not kidding you that there aren't internal enemies here. There are all kinds of internal enemies here, and it's because we have a ridiculous immigration policy.
Yeah, our immigration policies have led to the problems that we're now trying to solve by not addressing our immigration policy, but by making American citizens criminal.
Exactly.
It's such a twisted method of dealing with these type of things that it's just beyond belief.
And with that, we are out of time, and I think we'll continue this tomorrow, don't you think?
I believe so.
Well, join us tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.